Well, I'm really excited about the message that we're going to talk about today as we're wrapping up this will be the last sermon in our series on family secrets. And we've talked about in this series on family secrets the idea of relationships within our marital relationships within our family with, you know, in-laws, brother-in-laws, father-in-laws, son-in-laws, all those kinds of things as we looked at Jonathan and David and their relationship with David, Jonathan and David and their relationship with Saul. We talked about marriage with Michael and David and Paltiel and all of that. And last week we looked at our sibling rivalries when we looked at David and all his brothers and the things that happened there. Today we're going to finish up with looking at something that's truly near and dear to my heart, and that's the idea of parenthood. It's the greatest job that you could ever have in your life. It's also the hardest job you'll probably ever have in your life. It's rewarding and it's draining. It's all those things all at the same time. But the thing that comes about in parenthood, the one thing that I can personally narrow this down to is that it's responsibility. And so we're going to look at today about taking responsibility for being parents. Parenting is an awesome responsibility. And I'm fortunate that God has blessed me with the best lady in the world to share in this responsibility with my wife. And I hope you other guys that are sitting there that are parents are going, nuh-uh, sucker, this is the best one, as you point at your wife. And if you don't, you'll wish you had later. So, but I'm glad that I get to partner with Kelly and doing this exciting adventure of parenting and raising kids. And God has blessed us with, we believe, three beautiful, wonderful children. Not perfect children. We don't even try and pretend that. But Mackenzie, Hayden, and Ian. And we're thankful that God has blessed us with them. We also feel very ill-equipped at most times in trying to raise them. But it is something that we embrace. It's something that we relish in the opportunity and the responsibility of raising our children. And today, I'd asked Kelly to help me, and she was sick yesterday and wasn't sure if she'd be able to do this today. And so I'm kind of taking this on my own today. And so, but she has, and the reason I asked her to help me with this is because she's done more of the parenting than I have. God has blessed us in that she's able to stay home and raise her children, and I'm not a dummy. I know that because she spends so much more time with them, she invests in their lives a lot more than I ever get a chance to. I try and be active and involved in my children's lives, but my wife has had a greater influence on our children than I know I have, and I don't want to even try and deny that. She has truly invested in our children, and she's done, I believe, a great job. But parenting is hard. Parenting is a lot of hard work. Parenting is also fun. There's a lot of great things that you see, a lot of life stories that come out of parenting, and a lot of life that you get with that. One of the stories Kelly was going to share with you this morning was about our middle son, Hayden. Hayden was 5 years old, and they were down in the basement, and Ian was three, and Ian was sitting across from him, and Hayden took Ian's cars and was playing with them and wouldn't let Ian have them back. Ian started throwing a fit like a lot of three-year-olds do. I want my cars. So Kelly said, Hayden, why don't you just give him his cars back? So Hayden does like any big brother would do. He extends his hands out, and he slowly opens his hands to let Ian get the cars, and when Ian's going to reach for them, Hayden throws them away, just like any brother would do, and the cars went flying through the air, and they hit these light bulbs. I don't remember. We talked about this a little bit. Somebody had come, and something was going on in our basement, and the light bulbs were being changed, and they were set in the corner, and so when Hayden threw them, they hit those light bulbs. They bust. They shattered. They're everywhere, and Kelly was like, Hayden, why'd you do that? He said, I didn't do it. The wind did it. We're in a basement. There's no wind. So she said, Hayden, you weren't in trouble at all. It was an accident until you lied. You lied and you said the wind did it. So he was disciplined. He was sent to his room. The next day they talked about it. Mom, the wind did it. He was given a swat and he was sent to his room for lying. The third day, why'd you do it? The wind did it. Same result. He was given a swat. He was sent to his room. They talked about it. Somehow Kelly got into this conversation with him. And in Hayden's mind, what had happened is when he threw those cars, the cars created wind. and the wind hit the light bulbs and shattered the light bulbs. We didn't buy it, but if you ask him today, he'll still say that that's exactly what happened. But it just goes to show, parenting's hard. Being a kid's hard work, too. Parenting's a hard job. Being a kid's a hard job. All of us here today have been influenced in one way or another by our parents. Whether you had parents that were involved in every aspect of your life, parents that were at every sporting event or music recital, they were there for everything you went through. They gave up time to go and hang out with their friends so that they could be there to support you, to be your biggest cheerleader. Some of you may have had parents like that. My mom was one of those kinds of parents. I don't think the lady ever missed a football game. I played over 50 football games in high school, and I don't think she missed a one. She was there at every one of them, even games that she shouldn't have been at. There was this one Friday, I look up in the stands. My mom had worked for Whirlpool, and she was doing something with this machine. The machine malfunctioned, and when it did, it went pierced her middle finger, and it twisted. And what it did is it pulled some tendon that was attached to her elbow. It pulled it right out, right up through her middle finger. That night, sorry, it was pretty cool, though, but that night, she was at the football game, and she had this huge white bandage wrapped around her finger, and the doctors made her elevate her hand. And so here she is sitting on the home side. The opposing team wasn't real happy with her being there, but she was sitting there, and she didn't miss a game. Even in this pain, she's there to support us, to be there and be involved. Kelly's parents were involved in everything that they did. All the games they played, all the musicals they were in, all the plays they were in. Her family's very talented in that way, and so they were at everything. Her dad would actually go into work. He worked 45 minutes away. He'd actually go into work 45 minutes early so that he could take off in order to be at all the events. He'd videotape them all. Kelly wished she could get rid of all those videotapes. She can't. But anyway, they've got all that, and because they were there, they were involved in our lives. Others of us, we may have had parents that weren't involved in anything. They wouldn't come to anything that we did. They never showed up at any of the games, any of the recital, any of that stuff. We knew they loved us. They loved us deeply. They just weren't there for those things. That's the way my dad was. I know my dad loved me, but I also know my dad was never at one sporting event I ever had. And that was the only thing I did, is I did sports. But he never came. He didn't come to not one, because he just didn't like sports, and that hurt. I mean, I know the man loved me, but it still hurt. Some of us, though, maybe we had parents that wanted to be there. They would have given anything to be able to be at anything we had, but they just couldn't because of work schedules or maybe finances, whatever it may be. They just couldn't be there even though they wanted to. Others of us, we may have had parents that were at everything, but the parents really wished they were someplace else. They could have cared less how we performed. They could have cared less, you know, what we were doing. They were just there playing the role, just showing up. And then when they were there, all they would do is criticize every move we made. Some of you may have had parents like that. Some of you may be parents like that. I don't know. But we have all been impacted by our parents in some way, whether they've been involved in our lives or they've neglected us as we've grown up. One way or another, we've been affected by that. It just goes to show that parenting is a hard job. It's a lot of work. And being a kid is a hard job. In our passage today, what we're going to look at is we're going to read about the hard job of parenting. We're going to read about the hard job of being a child and what all that looks like and how all of it plays out. We'll see what happens when a parent neglects their responsibility of raising their children. We'll talk about the things that we can do to maybe improve on our parenting. So this is not a beat you up kind of sermon. That's not what I want to do. What I want to say is, we're all parents. Some of us are good parents. Some of us are great parents. Some of us may not be good parents. But hopefully there will be things that we can talk about today that can help us improve on our parenting. Because I don't know if you're like me, but I need all the improvement in every area of life that I have. I need to continually improve in everything. And I know this doesn't need to be said, but I'm going to say it anyway. Kelly and I both know beyond a shadow of a doubt that we're not perfect parents. You all know that. We probably spend more time criticizing ourselves over our mistakes as parents than we do celebrating the successes we have as parents, but we do have a heart for children. We do have a heart for raising children and being involved in their lives and acknowledging that responsibility and improving our role as a parent. Also, some of you may be tempted to mentally check out right now, so I'm going to ask you to get back with me, okay? Don't check out. Some of you may want to check out because maybe you don't have children in your home at this time. Maybe you've raised your kids and sent them on. Or maybe you're at the stage of life where you're not ready to have children in your home. Or maybe you haven't been blessed with being able to have children in your home at this time. And that's okay, because what we're going to talk about this morning is, I believe, principles that all of us can use to invest in the lives of children everywhere. Just because you don't have a child in your home doesn't mean you don't have an influence on children. Okay? And so we need to keep that in mind as well, because we all need to be ministering to children everywhere, because parenting is a hard job and parents need help. Personally, I desire as much help as I can have. If I'm not around, you're invited to help me. Anyway, we can think, as when Kelly and I were talking about this, we started thinking of different examples of people that have invested in our children's lives, and we're grateful for that. Many of you in this congregation have just poured yourselves into our children, and we thank you for that. One of the first ones we thought of was Miss Bev Sauer. She has invested in our daughter Mackenzie's life. Kelly's not the biggest fan of baking and cooking and all that stuff. It's just not something she really loves to do. That's something I like to do. But Miss Bev loves to bake. And Mackenzie wants to learn how to bake and stuff. So Miss Bev said, well, you know what? I'll teach you. And she brings her to her home. She teaches her how to make bread. And she's taught her how to make, they've made cookies together and just things like that. Just simply investing in her child. And we just are so grateful for that. There's people like John Gage who comes by and grabs her boys and takes them jeeping. I'm not quite sure yet what that's teaching them other than climbing big mountains and hills, but you know, he's pouring himself into them. He's a grandfather figure for our kids. Our kids don't have their grandparents anywhere close to them. And so it's just a huge blessing to have someone speak into their lives and to build that relationship. There's people like Bruce who have just given a lot of time and invested in our kids a lot. They call him Uncle Bruce. He tried to get them to call him Uncle Boo Boo, and I said, I'll give you a boo boo if you teach them that. But they call him Uncle Bruce because he's there. They talk to him. He listens to them. He's invested in their lives. People like Jason and Jamie, who open their homes to all our kids, all the kids in our children's ministry. They just let them come in. They let them be kids. They let them fellowship with other kids right there in their own home. And it's a great thing. We got people like Scott Marshall who come to our house on Sunday afternoons, and he gives drum lessons to Ian. Thanks, Scott. He gives guitar lessons to Hayden. He's investing in their lives. I know Travis is doing a play right now, and he's investing in the lives of young people. I know of people Rachel Smith, the mom with everything. She's got just anything you need, and she's always there, and she's always pouring into our children. She helped me explain something to Hayden yesterday that I couldn't explain, and Rachel was there, and she was able to do that. We have relationships with Steve and Ashley Swindell. We started this little family tradition where we take all our kids over to Adair. They do this egg hunt. After that, our kids come back, and with their kids, they color eggs and stuff like that. That won't last forever, but for now, it's great, and our kids are building traditions and memories and things that you can never take away from them. There are other children that are being invested in by people in this congregation. I called Chris and asked if I could, Chris Smith, and I asked him if I could use this, and he said, sure, but Chris is not a hunter. He just doesn't get into that kind of thing. But his oldest son, Brady, was wanting to learn how to hunt, and so Chris did something pretty remarkable. He called another man and said, hey, would you teach my son how to hunt? And so he called Greg Myers, and Greg has invested into Brady and taught him how to hunt and is working with him on that. Josh Edson, young guy in our church, he's a high schooler now. He's a senior this year in high school. Dick Hart has come alongside Josh and taking him on nursing home visits to teach him what it is to serve others. And Josh, from time to time, he serves quite a bit in our children's ministry. And we're just thankful that you can see how those kinds of things duplicate themselves. We have Keitra Russell and Sam Foltz who invest in the lives of cheerleaders. And because they've been there steadily investing in the lives of high school cheerleaders, we have two young ladies on that squad that have given their life to Christ. And I can't help but think that's because of the influence that those ladies have had in the lives of others. And we have folks like, well, Alex and Sam, they open their home every week, a couple of nights a week to our students. Not just students that you'll see here on Sunday morning, but students in our community that come into their house and they're involved in Bible study. They're involved in just playing games and doing life together and fellowshipping with those people. The entire Gates family, my goodness, for decades, and I mean decades, the Gates family has been involved in the lives of children in this community, in this church. Some of you, you may still get a card from Jan as she continues to send cards out to the kids that have come up in her ministry. She's just had a great impact on children. There are countless other examples, and if I missed you as an example, please don't take that personally. But there are just so many examples, and this church has done a great job and continues to do a great job of investing in the lives of children, but we must always keep it at the forefront. We must always think about how are we investing ourselves into the lives of children, because as a parent, I can't be all of it to my kids. My kids need other adults that can speak truth into their lives, and I desire that, and I need that, and I'm glad that I have that in this community of like-minded believers. And so I just want to say thank you to all you that have done that, because parenting is a hard job. Being a kid is a hard job, and as parents, we need help as we do this. So this morning in our Bible study, as we turn to Scripture, we're going to read a story that talks about the lack of responsibility, the lack of accepting the responsibility of being a parent. So if you have your Bible, I want to encourage you to turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 13. If you don't have a Bible, there should be a Bible like this in the chair in front of you. Please grab it, open it up to 2 Samuel 13, because you really need to follow along with us and allow God's Word to speak into your life. What I want to do just for time's sake is I want to just share with you the story of what's going on from verses 1 through 17. I'm going to pick it up in verse 18, and we'll read it through verse 31. I'm going to be reading, when I read it, I'm going to read it from the Message, but you follow along in whatever version that you have there with you. But here's what's happening. There's an event that's going on. You've got Amnon, you've got Tamar, Absalom, Jonadab, and you've got David all involved in this that's getting ready to take place. And basically what's happened is Amnon has a crush on his sister, Tamar. He's got the hots for her. He thinks she's beautiful. He can't stop lusting about her. And so he's consumed with who she is, and he's consumed with her physical attributes. That's what he's preoccupied with. And so Amnon has this deep desire to sleep with his sister. That's what's going on. And so Jonadab comes on the scene. Jonadab is Amnon's cousin, and he's a slicky boy. He's streetwise. He's street smart. And he says, hey, man, just act like you're sick. And when you're sick, get Tamar to come and cook for you, and then just get her in your room, and you can have your way with her. And so that's what happens. David comes by the house. He says, Amnon, I see you're sick. Is there anything I can do for you? And Amnon says, yeah, have my sister Tamar come. Have her come and prepare a meal for me. I want dumplings or bread or whatever version you read, different things, but have a meal for me. And so she comes to David, says, okay, which David's not protecting his daughter there, because everybody knew that Amnon had a crush on her. So he sends her on in, sends her into the wolves. That's what David does, sends Tamar in. She prepares this meal for it. And then Amnon sends all his servants out. Now you got to remember, Amnon's the firstborn. I mean, he's the oldest of all of David's sons. He's next in line for the throne. And so everybody's afraid of Amnon. Amnon sends all the servants out, and he tells Tamar, bring the food in here to me. When she does, he rapes her. That's exactly what happens. So if anybody ever tells you the Bible's not interesting, have them read 2 Samuel 13. But that's what happens. So let's pick it up here in verse 18. And again, I'm going to read from the Message. You follow along with me. She, Tamar, was wearing a long-sleeved gown, because that's how virgin princesses used to dress from early adolescence on. Tamar, she poured ashes on her head. Then she ripped the long-sleeved gown. She tore the sleeves off the gown. She held her head in her hands, and she walked away sobbing as she went. Her brother Absalom said to her, "Has your brother Amnon had his way with you?" See, first thought. People knew what was going on. They knew the crush that Amnon had on her. And then Absalom, he's not so consoling. Listen to what he says. "Now, my dear sister, let's keep it quiet." You hear it? It's a secret. Let's keep this a family matter. This is a family secret. "He is, after all, your brother. Don't take this so hard." Really? Don't take this so hard? That's what you tell to someone that's just been violated, that's been shamed, that's been raped? But Tamar, she lived in her brother Absalom's home, bitter and desolate. King David heard the whole story, He was enraged, but he did not discipline Amnon. David doted on him because he was his firstborn. Absalom quit speaking to Amnon, not a word, whether good or bad, because he hated him for violating his sister Tamar. 2 years went by. One day, Absalom threw a sheep shearing party. Anybody ever been to a sheep shearing party? I haven't. If you've ever been to one, tell me what it's like, because I'm curious. But he was having a sheep shearing party in Baal Hazor in the vicinity of Ephraim and invited all the king's sons. He also went to the king and invited him. He said, look, I'm throwing a sheep shearing party. Come, bring your servants. But the king said, no, son, not this time. And not the whole household. We'd just be a burden to you. And Absalom pushed. David wouldn't budge, but he did give in. No, but he did give him his blessing. Then Absalom said, well, if you won't come, at least let my brother Amnon come. It's been 2 years. Let him come. And I like David's response. And why? Why do you want Amnon to come? Why should he go with you? But Absalom was so insistent that he gave in and let Amnon and all the rest of the king's sons go. Absalom had prepared a banquet fit for a king. Then he instructed his servants, look sharp now, when Amnon, when he's well into the sauce, in other words, when he's drunk off his rocker, I want you to, and he's feeling no pain, I'll give an order to strike Amnon, to kill him. And don't be afraid, because I'm the one giving the command. So have courage. You can do it. Remember, they're getting ready to assassinate the man that's next in line for the throne of all of Israel. Absalom's servants did as to Amnon exactly what their master ordered. All the king's sons got out as fast as they could. That's the kind of brothers I want. Somebody's attacking me and my brothers bail on me. They take off. They're running. But that's what they did. They got on their mules and they rode off. And I love this. While they were still on their road, a rumor came to the king. So the rumor mill beats the physical presence of the sons. You ever notice that about rumors? They usually get there before you do. But the rumor came and it said, Absalom just killed all the king's sons. Not one is left. The king stood up, ripped his clothes to shreds, threw himself on the floor. All of his servants who were standing by him did the same thing. Now, guys, the purpose of this story has oftentimes been talked about as far as Amnon's morality. And though it does bring out Amnon's morality or lack of morals and his issues with that, it also shows how David's own household produced calamity for him, how it fulfilled the prophecy that was given just a chapter earlier in chapter 12, verses 11 and 12. It says this, "This is what the Lord says. Out of your own household, I'm going to bring calamity upon you. Before your very eyes, I will take your wives and give them to one who is close to you." Now, if you know the history, and if you don't, I want to encourage you, go back and read 2 Samuel. It's fascinating stuff. But what happens is Absalom eventually marries David's wives, one close to him. His son takes them as his bride. And he will lie with your wives in broad daylight. You did it in secret, David. What you did in secret. But I will do this thing in broad daylight before all of Israel. David was furious over what had happened. That's true. He was furious, but evidently did nothing to punish Amnon for what he had done. In other words, David didn't accept his parental responsibilities. So today what I want to do is I just want to look at what it means to accept our parental responsibilities. And accepting parental responsibilities means accepting the responsibility to discipline. That's the first one. Do you know, according to Leviticus chapter 20, verse 17, what David should have done is cut Amnon off from the royal family, kicked him out of his house. Leviticus 20, 17 says, "If there is a man who takes his sister, his father's daughter, or his mother's daughter, so that he sees her nakedness and she sees his nakedness." Now, we're adults, so we know what we're talking about here, right? "It is a disgrace. And they shall be cut off in the sight of the sons of their people. He has uncovered his sister's nakedness. He bears his guilt." And this is exactly what Amnon did to his sister Tamar. He raped her. He exposed her. He shamed her in front of the entire community. What David should have done by law was to send Amnon away. But instead, David extended his protection to Amnon. Yeah, he was furious, but he didn't carry out the proper discipline. Some may think that what David did was okay. That's his son. How could you send your son away? It wasn't okay. It was a violation of God's word. That's why people have a hard time with 1 Corinthians chapter 7. I encourage you to read that on your own. When you have questions, go talk to our elders or talk to me or talk to anybody on staff. We'll talk to you about 1 Corinthians 7 and what that means. But this is what David should have done. He should have sent his son away out of his own household because what he did was a disgrace. And if he had punished accordingly, this may have prevented some of the other things that happened. It was catastrophic what happened later, as we read earlier. Some think discipline is just harshness. Some people think discipline is harshness, but in all actuality, discipline is one of the greatest forms of love that one person can show to another. Discipline is one of the greatest forms of love that one person can show to another. Discipline, what it does is it communicates this. It communicates, I care enough about you to help you or to help make sure you're going in the right direction. I care enough about you to help make sure you're going in the right direction. You see, when we won't or we don't discipline, what we're in essence doing is we're condoning the actions. No matter how much we may disagree with the actions, if we don't discipline, if we don't correct, we're condoning the actions. We're condoning the behavior. And at the same time, we're losing the trust and respect of our children. Discipline is not just about punishment, as many people seem to think it is. Discipline is about changing actions. So we must understand how to discipline our children. And we have to do it accordingly to that child. Proverbs chapter 29, verses 15 through 17 says this, wise discipline imparts wisdom. Spoiled adolescents embarrass their parents. When degenerates take charge, crime runs wild. But the righteous will eventually observe their collapse. Discipline your children. You'll be glad you did. They'll turn out delightful to live with. When our kids were smaller, we learned early on that we couldn't discipline them all the same way. They had different personalities, different character traits. And so we knew early on that we had to treat each child a little bit differently. Some good friends of ours gave us that piece of advice, and I'm glad they did, because I kind of thought you just did it all the same way. One blanket rule took care of all of it, but that's not the case. That's not how we should do that. On Tuesday, earlier this week, Kelly came home from shopping, and when she came in, she turned the radio on, and she caught the tail end of Gary Chapman talking about his book, The Five Love Languages, and how we can use those love languages to help discipline our children. And it just made perfect sense. And one of the things that we can do a lot of times is we can use our child's love languages in a very negative way, and it can have a catastrophic influence on our children. For example, if your child's primary love language, if you don't know about the five love languages of Gary Chapman, I want to encourage you to get that book, and you can read that and learn more about them. But if your primary love language, if your child's primary love language is words of affirmation, and all you do is use negative words of criticism against your child, really what you may do is more harm than good. If your child's primary love language is physical touch, and all you do is spank, you're probably going to do more harm than good. If your child's primary love language is, we said words of affirmation, didn't we? We said physical touch, and if it's, there's another one, time. Yeah, quality time, that's one of them. And all you do is put your child in time out, then that can be catastrophic to your child. Earlier, we talked about Hayden and Kelly down in the basement and about the wind breaking the light, and she kept responding with the spank and sending him to his room, and they battled over this for 3 days. Hayden's tough. He's not going to show you pain. The kid rolled off a bed, broke his arm, and didn't shed a tear. He took a nap in the emergency room waiting to get a cast on his arm. Spanking him just, he doesn't respond. That's not the best way but Hayden's primary love language is words of affirmation. And so what we did is, Kelly, she's a lot better at this than I am. She created this sticker chart, which gave positive reinforcement to good behavior. And now after 3 weeks of doing that, when he was five, it took care of the lying. He doesn't struggle with that anymore. And so he, so using his love language to benefit and to discipline was beneficial. Now, some people would say, no, you wear him out. You wear him out until he confesses. Okay, go at it. What are you going to do? What kind of bond are you going to have with your kid? Some kids, they, you know, like Mackenzie, we learned early on with her, you got to give her time. She needs alone time. Boy, does she need alone time. You know, just give her time. These are Kelly's words. These aren't mine, okay, what I'm getting ready to say. So I'm not going to get in trouble. But Kelly says that Mackenzie's a lot like her, likes to have the last word. Still not getting in trouble. So Kelly says, you know, she's had to learn to choose her battles wisely. And now that Mackenzie's getting older, it's harder to control her tongue. So even talking and working through verses about being quick to listen and slow to speak are things that they're working on together. Ian's just hard to figure out. That kid never stops laughing. Life is his playground. He is going to have fun. He enjoys it all the way. And it makes disciplining him difficult at times. Honestly, we're still trying to figure out the best way to help correct this young man, to discipline him in the areas that he needs discipline in. If you spank him, he can laugh. Not to be disrespectful to you, but he tries to cry, and he can't. He just can't. Trust me, if I have to swat, it's okay, you know. But he tries not to laugh. He's trying to cry. When you send him to his room, he ends up playing some kind of game. One day we sent him to his room for timeout. He was really trying to climb the wall like Spider-Man. Another time, when you sit down and try and talk to him using words of affirmation, he gets distracted. And he smiles. He's just really hard to understand. And so one day Kelly overheard Ian and Hayden talking about, you know, wanting to go in the army like Dad had done. And Kelly said, Ian, you might not even want to try because you won't make it out of boot camp because you're going to laugh, you're going to get in trouble and all this stuff. And he said, she said, because, you know, when you get in trouble at home, you laugh about it. And his response was this: well, if you didn't look so weird when you're mad, I wouldn't laugh. You ever looked at yourself when you're mad? You do look weird. Well, that's weird. The idea here is, though, that each child is different. Every child is different. You can't do blanket discipline. It's just, it won't work as well. And so each child needs to be disciplined in a way that will teach them and correct them so that their own gifts and abilities will be able to flourish as we're disciplining, and so that they'll be able to give glory to God in their actions. See, when David refused to acknowledge what Amnon did, he devalued Tamar and further prevented her from being able to use the gifts that God had blessed her with. Amnon was taught that from the very beginning that he could get away with whatever he wanted. He clearly had guilt for his actions. And that was that he hated Tamar. I mean, he just hated her more than he had lusted for her after he raped her. He knew it was wrong. But had David disciplined Amnon in a way that he would respond to, that may have kept the family from falling apart the way it did. Instead of sweeping the issues under the rug, he should have dealt with them and disciplined him in the right way. But parenting is a hard job, and it's hard work. But accepting parental responsibility is what we must do, and that means that we must also accept responsibility to protect. David did not protect his children. Clearly, from our passage, we see that David failed in this area. He didn't protect Tamar. I mean, like we said, the entire community knew that Amnon had a crush on her, that he lusted for her. David sent her in. David didn't protect Amnon. It was clear that Absalom still was furious at Amnon. So much so that David said, why do you want Amnon to come to your party? He didn't protect his son in the right way. As parents, we have a responsibility to protect our children. That's just our responsibility. I don't know all the particulars. Kelly doesn't know all the particulars to this story either, but apparently when her cousin was a senior in high school, One morning, his mom, which is Aunt Jane got up. Aunt Jane's a great lady, small little lady, very sweet, never says a bad word to anybody. But Aunt Jane got up. She looked out the window, and she saw some guy tinkering with her son's car. And she yelled out, she said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm going to kill your son." That was his response. And Aunt Jane said, "Well, get off my property." And then she called the police, and the police came. And after they did their investigation, they found out that it's through some gang activity that they were trying to, that this was a gang initiation thing or something, and they were trying to put a bomb. They found a bomb underneath her son's car. They were going to blow his car up. So what Uncle Don and Aunt Jane did is they took their son and they sent him to another state to finish out his senior year. They separated him from mom and dad. They separated him from friends. They separated him from high school. They separated him from all the things that he knew. Why? To protect him. That's the kind of love that we should have, that kind of protecting love, that we're willing to hurt ourselves in order to protect our children. And they did that. Proverbs chapter 122, verse 7 in the NASB says, "The Lord will protect you from all evil. He will protect your soul." Parents, we have been given a charge. We need to help protect our children. So what can we do to protect our kids? Maybe it's not protecting them from bombs underneath the car, but how can we protect our children? Maybe it's protecting them from the movies they see. Instead of just being worried about the rating on the side of the box, maybe it's sitting down and watching them with them and then being able to talk to them about it or watching it before, protecting their minds from what's going into their mind. Maybe it's protecting them from the kind of people they're hanging out with. You know, so that they're, you know, if I think it's great if we're involved in the lives of people that we need to be involved with, people that don't know Christ. But when our children start taking on those behaviors, we really need to be involved. We need to be involved in the very beginning with who our children are developing friendships with and helping them. I think it's cool. I watch Hayden right now. He's involved in the life of a young Islamic boy. He's Muslim, and Hayden is talking to him about Jesus. I want him to be involved in that kid's life, but I also want to protect Hayden from being influenced in a way that's contrary to Christianity. But he's able to witness. So I have the responsibility of trying to protect him. So I pray for him and just continue to try and do that. Even if you're not a parent, some ways that you can help protect kids is by keeping them from going down destructive paths of their own. If you see my child, and I think most parents would agree with me on this, if you see one of my children doing something that's destructive to them or getting ready to hurt another child, and I'm nowhere around, that's a key there, because you don't want to overparent, you don't want to parent over the parent, okay? But if I'm nowhere around, step in and speak into my kid's life and correct them, okay? I'm giving everybody permission to do that right now. And in first service, I saw a lot of other parents, you know, they were giving that affirmation. I think parents, as parents, we need that. We need people being able to do that because parenting's hard work. But we have a responsibility to protect them. And accepting parental responsibility also means that we accept the responsibility to comfort our children. In our story today, Tamar is hurting deeply because of what had happened to her. I mean, it's crushed her. I mean, she's been violated in ways that no one should ever be violated. And she's violated this way by her brother. And she's hurting. And her dad didn't bring her into his house. Her dad said, "Go live with your brother." In essence, what he says, go to another house. I'm going to take care of the one that hurts you. I may be mad at him, but I'm going to comfort him. I'm going to protect him. Absalom, he's hurting because of what's happened to Tamar. Amnon's hurting because of what he did to Tamar. Everybody's hurting. David's hurting. We have a responsibility to help comfort our children when they hurt. Our children need to know that they're loved unconditionally. Doesn't matter what they do, we're going to love them. This is when you tell your kids, you know what? I value you because of who you are, because God has made you, because you're special in His sight. He's taken you and He's crafted you together. He's knitted you together in your mother's womb, in the secret place, in the quiet place. God put you together so you have value. Some of you don't know that. Some of you here today, you've never heard that maybe from your parents. You've never heard that you have value simply because you're created in the image of God. You have value. No other reason. Doesn't matter if you're a good athlete. Doesn't matter if you can read at a higher level in school than all the other kids. Doesn't matter what it is. You're valued simply because you're created in the image of God. And He loves you. And our kids need to hear that. They need for parents to speak that truth into their life. This is where you tell them you're proud of them just because. Not because they've done something to make you proud. This is where you stay up late at night when they're sick to make sure they're okay. This is when you let them cry over things that probably are really not a big deal to you, but it's the whole world to them. This is where you give without expecting anything in return, which is most of parenting. This is where you take them out to celebrate after a loss of a ball game, not just the victories. This is where we sometimes stop coaching and stop lecturing and just enjoy the game and play it with them, and then we shut up and we listen. This is where all they need to know is that you're there and you have their best interest at heart for whatever goes on in their life. This is where you allow them to express their grief. There's nothing like watching your child hurt. If you've had a hurting child, you know how difficult it is, whether that's emotionally or physically or spiritually. Some of you already know this. We've invited some of you to pray for Kelly and me as we've been going through this, but my mom and my stepdad are going through a divorce. My stepdad told us over Christmas that he was just ready for a change, and he found a change, and he's going in that direction, and he's leaving my mother, and it's been heartbreaking to deal with for us as a family. But he told all the adult children, and then he gave us the privilege of telling our children, the grandkids. So we prayed about it for a month, and we invited some of you to pray with us about that, just how our kids would take it. And so at the end of January, we shared that with our kids, and they took it hard, and it hurt them deeply. And they wanted to call Nana to make sure she was doing okay. That's what they call my mom. Dee Dee is what they call my stepdad. So they got on the phone and they called. And they were calling for Nana, but Dee Dee answered. Mackenzie had called. Whew. You don't want to cross her. What she said to him was truth. She used honest words, but she used hard words. I was so proud of how she controlled herself, but how she was so straightforward by saying things like, what you're doing is selfish. It's rude to the rest of the family. Well, I don't mean to hurt anybody was the response. Her response back was, if you didn't mean to hurt anybody, you'd stop doing this right now and start thinking straight. And she's 9. How many of us adults could stand to have that spoken into our lives? Hayden, he handled it entirely different. Hayden went and he sat in the living room and he listened to Mackenzie give a tongue lashing. And he sat there and he sat there and he kept listening. He finally got up and he went and he said, Dee Dee, you say you don't know why you're doing it. Does it make any sense to do something that you don't know why you're doing? I was like, you just turned 8. Your mom's good. And then Ian responded with an emotional breakdown on the phone. He just sobbed. And to hold your kid and let them sob is a hard thing to do, and there's nothing you can do to take that hurt away. But that's what we're there for. We're there to comfort. We're there to allow our children to express themselves in a way that they can work through their grief, and we just got to comfort them through that. And that's not always convenient for us as parents, but that's what we're called to do. Accepting parental responsibility is hard. Being a parent is hard work, but we must accept our responsibilities. And accepting our responsibilities, I believe, is this as well. It's to lead our children. And I'll close with this. David's children learned all their character traits. They learned all their behaviors from watching their father, from watching what he did. Our children are watching us. Whether it's good or it's bad, our children are watching us as we lead them. David's boys learned that whatever woman they wanted, they just had to go out and take her. And then if a problem arose, they could just take care of the problem by getting rid of it. See, David went out and he took Michal. He took her from Paltiel. He took Bathsheba from Uriah. And when Uriah came home, David had him killed. He got rid of the problem because Bathsheba was going to give birth to a child. He couldn't hide it. Uriah was out fighting. What had happened? They learned all this from their dad. Proverbs 22:16. I love this passage. It's probably one of the most misunderstood, but it says this, train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. A lot of people misinterpret this. They think it's talking about discipline. There are many other passages in the book of Proverbs that deal with discipline, but this particular passage of Scripture says, train a child, and pay attention to that word train. It's the Hebrew word henak, and the word henak means to equip, to dedicate that child. It's often used to talking about dedicating a temple or dedicating a house or dedicating an image. But as it deals with children, it means to dedicate the child to God, to prepare the child for his future responsibilities, to exercise or train the child for adulthood. That's what it means. Reggie Joyner, in his book, Think Orange, which, by the way, I'm just going to make a plug for one of our Sunday school classes. We have a class coming up that Jason Segelke, our children's minister, and Kelly are going to teach together. It's about what we're doing here as a church to try and partner with homes, to partner with parents, and helping them raise their children. Now, if you want to go that parenting all by yourself, you're more than welcome, but I don't. I want people to speak into my children's lives. Because the more people that speak into their lives and have a Christian influence, the broader they're going to understand, the better they're going to understand. And so we have a class here. So I'm just going to say it this way. If you signed up for a class and you didn't sign up for that one and you have children in that age range, I want to encourage you, scratch your name off that list, go sign up for that, and understand how this church wants to partner with you. Not tell you how to do it, but to partner with you in raising godly children. But here's what Reggie Joyner says in his book, Think Orange. He says, adults, as we lead, we must do it from a perspective that everything is connected to God. Because it is. He says, if we don't start with God, we may end up in the wrong place. I believe a lot of people think this passage is dealing only with their children staying in church, making sure they're performing all the right things, looking good on the outside. And they miss the point that this is not about that. This is about their relationship with Christ and having Christ in every aspect of their life. One of the greatest pieces of advice Kelly and I ever received, I believe, as parents, was from Tom and Jan Ewald. Tom said, Donnie, when you bring Mackenzie home, on the very first day, start preparing her to leave. Flies in the face of the way a lot of people parent. Flies in the face of the way our culture tells us to parent a lot of times. But what he's saying is, dedicate your child to God and prepare the child for their future responsibilities. Exercise and train this child for adulthood and what they're going to have to do as they go. Since our kids were conceived, Kelly and I have prayed that God would use us to help them in their way, to be obedient to God's call on their lives. We've prayed for future spouses. Even though Mackenzie is at a point right now, well, all of them are. They're never getting married. They're living with mom and dad forever. Okay, I hope not. But we've been praying for future spouses. We've been praying for the ministries that God can allow them, that God will bless them in as they do them. We've been praying for them to be godly parents in the future. We've been praying that they'd be able to share Jesus. One of the hardest aspects of leading is admitting when we mess up as parents. And we've had to do some admitting as we've messed up as parents. Having to wait for your child to decide if they're going to forgive you can be the most grueling 30 seconds of your life. But we need to teach our children humility and acknowledging that we mess up too as adults. The fault's always not our child. I did not have the opportunity to grow up in a Christian home, but my wife did. And one of the things I appreciate most about Kelly's family and her parents is that they led by example. They were highly involved in each of the lives of their children. They were highly involved in their church family as well. Kelly lived 30 minutes outside of town, but they were there even in the deepest snowstorms. Her family was there. And it wasn't just to be at church. It was because they were committed to a community of believers. If someone needed a place to stay, they stayed at their house because they knew they could get a ride back into church because her family would be there. They were not just sitting in the pews. Her parents taught them to be involved. Her parents were actively involved in children's ministries and student ministries and encouraged their kids to do the same. But the other thing is that her parents wanted other adults to speak into their children's lives. And because of that, Kelly has grown and blossomed in her relationship with Christ because there are other ladies that were able to say things to her that she wouldn't hear from her mom. There are other men that were able to say things to her that she couldn't hear from her dad. That's why when we work together as community and we have their best interest at heart, it really allows the church to flourish. So let me just ask you this. How and where are you leading your children? How and where are you impacting other children? Folks, if we're not focused on the cross, there's no way we can lead our children to the cross. Jesus, he leads us to the cross. He's led us to the cross, and he's led us there to provide us with comfort, to protect us, and to discipline us so that we may become more and more like him. So are you allowing Christ to personally lead you to his cross? Are you personally allowing Christ to comfort you in your life? Are you asking for his protection? Are you allowing him to discipline you in your walk so that your children will look into your life and witness how you are owning your responsibility?